A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He's been thinking about that moment when you step off a plane after a long flight and wonder where else in the world that aircraft has been today. The core question is how airlines balance the relentless pressure to keep extremely expensive assets working hard against the non-negotiable need for maintenance and safety. Is there an upper limit to how many flights a short-haul plane can do in a day? Is there any mandatory resting period for the aircraft itself? And how does the business model actually work when you're trying to squeeze every possible hour out of a machine that costs hundreds of millions of dollars?
The Airbus A320 that landed at London Heathrow at 10 this morning might have already flown 4 sectors today, and it'll fly 3 more before midnight. The question isn't just how that's possible. It's how the airline knows with certainty that sector number 7 is safe.
That's the thing. Most people assume there's some hard regulatory cap, some magic number where the FII or EASA says, stop, that plane has done enough. But the real answer is messier and more interesting.
Much more interesting. Let's start with the basic tension. A Boeing 777-300ER costs roughly $375 million new at list price. At that price, every single hour the aircraft spins on the ground is a liability. It's not generating revenue. It's just sitting there, depreciating, costing money in parking fees and financing costs. But the flip side, skip or defer maintenance to keep it flying, and you're looking at a catastrophe, not just financially, but in human terms.
The entire business model of commercial aviation is built on walking this impossibly thin line between utilization and safety. And what's wild is that they actually pull it off, day after day, across tens of thousands of flights.
The key metric is something called aircraft utilization, measured in block hours per day. Block hours are the time from when the aircraft pushes back from the gate at the departure airport to when it arrives at the gate at the destination. It's the time the airline is actually operating the plane with passengers or cargo aboard.
So, not just airborne time.
It includes taxiing, waiting in the queue for takeoff, everything. And the numbers vary dramatically by business model. Ryanair targets about 11.5 block hours per day for its 737 fleet. Emirates targets 15 to 16 block hours per day for its A380s. Those are averages across the entire fleet, across the entire year.
11.5 doesn't sound that high when there are 24 hours in a day.
It doesn't until you realize what 11.5 block hours actually means operationally. A Ryanair 737 doesn't fly one 11-hour sector. It flies 6 to 8 short sectors with turn times as low as 25 minutes. Every turn involves landing, taxiing to the gate, deplaning 180-plus passengers, cleaning the cabin, restocking catering, refueling, boarding another 180 passengers, and pushing back. 11.5 block hours spread across 8 sectors means the aircraft is in constant motion from roughly 6 in the morning until 11:30 at night.
That 25-minute turn, that's the part that sounds almost impossible to anyone who's ever sat waiting for a plane to be cleaned.
It's genuinely impressive. But here's the key insight. The bottleneck in a 25-minute turn is almost never the aircraft. It's the ground crew and the gate availability. The plane can be refueled in about 12 minutes with modern high-flow fueling systems. The cabin can be cleaned in about 8 minutes by a trained crew of 4 to 6 people. Catering trucks can swap galley carts in under 5. The limiting factor is how fast you can get passengers off and on, and whether the gate is actually available.
The plane itself is just sitting there, ready to go, while humans scramble around it.
And that's the first big misconception to bust. The aircraft doesn't need to rest. The airframe doesn't get tired. The crew does. And there are extremely strict limits on crew duty time. The FII's Part 117 in the U.S. limits pilots to 100 flight hours per month and 1,000 per year. EUOPS. Subpart Q in Europe has similar limits. But the aircraft? The aircraft can fly back-to-back sectors essentially indefinitely, as long as the maintenance intervals are respected.
There's no regulatory cap on flight cycles per day for the airframe itself.
Not from the FAA, not from EASA, not from any civil aviation authority. The limits come from the maintenance program, not from flight operations regulations.
Which means the real question is how the maintenance program interacts with the schedule. If you're flying a narrowbody 8 sectors a day, every day, when does the maintenance actually happen?
This is where it gets fascinating. The maintenance program for a commercial aircraft is structured in layers. The most frequent is the pre-flight check, which the pilots do before every single sector. It's a walk-around inspection, checking for obvious damage, fluid leaks, tire condition. That takes about 10 minutes. Then you have transit checks, which happen between sectors and are slightly more thorough but still quick. Then you hit the lettered checks.
A checks, B checks, C checks, D checks. The alphabet of aviation maintenance.
B checks have mostly been phased out or absorbed into A and C checks on modern aircraft, but yes. An A check on a narrow body like a 737 or an A320 happens every 500 to 800 flight hours, which works out to roughly every 2 to 3 months. It's typically done overnight and takes about 6 to 8 hours. A C check happens every 18 to 24 months and takes 3 to 7 days. The aircraft is taken out of service, panels are opened, systems are inspected in depth. Then there's the D check, which happens every 6 to 10 years, takes 30 to 60 days, and essentially involves taking the entire aircraft apart and rebuilding it.
The daily rhythm of utilization is constrained primarily by the overnight window. You fly the aircraft hard all day. Then at night, when noise curfews kick in and demand drops, you have a window for maintenance.
That's the utilization ratchet. Airlines schedule aircraft to fly as many hours as possible during the day, then use the overnight curfew, typically 11 p.m. to 6 a.m. at noise. Sensitive airports as the mandatory resting period. But that rest period is also when maintenance happens, so the more you fly during the day, the less time you have for overnight fixes.
Which means if you're Wizz Air operating A321neos out of London Luton, flying 4 round trips to Eastern Europe in a single day with the last arrival at 11:30 p.m. and the first departure at 6:30 a.m, you've got exactly 7 hours for overnight maintenance and mandatory crew rest.
7 hours sounds like a lot until you realize the crew needs a minimum of 10 hours rest under EU OPS, so they're not the same crew doing the morning flight. But for the aircraft, 7 hours is tight. An A-check needs 6 to 8 hours. So, if an A-check is due, that aircraft is effectively out of service for the night, and you need a spare to cover the morning schedule.
That brings us to the spare ratio. How many spare aircraft does an airline keep sitting around to absorb these maintenance windows?
Typically 5 to 10% of fleet size as operational spares, but this varies enormously by business model. Ryanair operates with a very lean spare ratio, about 3%. Because their standardized all 737 fleet and point-to-point network make swaps incredibly easy. Any 737 can cover any 737's route. Long-haul carriers need more spares because a single A380 grounding can't be covered by a 777. You can't just substitute a different aircraft type on an ultra-long-haul route without major operational disruption.
The fleet commonality advantage. Southwest figured this out decades ago.
Southwest is the textbook case. All 737 fleet, 12 plus block hours per day, 25 minute turns. They've optimized every aspect of their operation around having a single aircraft type. Standardized maintenance procedures, standardized spare parts inventory, standardized crew training. When you have 40 different aircraft types like some legacy carriers, every maintenance procedure, every spare part, every training module multiplies in complexity.
Let's walk through a day in the life of a short-haul narrow-body to make this concrete. Pick an airline.
Let's take a Ryanair 737-800 based at London Stansted. First departure is at 6:10 a.m. to Dublin, but the aircraft has been sitting at the gate since 11 p.m. the night before. The overnight maintenance team has done a transit check. Maybe replaced a tire that was showing wear, topped off fluids, and signed off on the aircraft's technical log. The pilots arrive at about 5:15, do their pre-flight walk-around, check the log, verify fuel load. Passengers board at 5:40, pushback at 6:10.
Then it's a cascade of sectors.
Lands in Dublin at 7:20. 25-minute turn. Departs Dublin at 7:45 back to Stansted. Lands at 8:55. Another 25-minute turn, heads to Bergamo at 9:20. Lands at 11:50, local. Back to Stansted. Lands at 1:25 p.m. Over to Sofia. That's a 3-hour sector. Lands at 7:50 p.m. local. Back to Stansted. Lands at 11:10 p.m.
That's 6 sectors. And the aircraft has been in near constant motion for 17 hours.
If everything ran perfectly on schedule, the overnight maintenance team has from 11:10 p.m. to roughly 5 a.m., just under 6 hours, to do whatever needs doing before the cycle starts again. But here's where the schedule padding comes in. Airlines don't schedule for perfection. They schedule for reality.
Gate to gate versus block to block.
Gate to gate is the actual time the aircraft spins at the gate. Block to block is the scheduled time from pushback to arrival at the destination gate, which includes taxi time, airborne time, and a buffer. Airlines pad the block times to absorb routine delays without cascading failures. If the flight from Stansted to Dublin is scheduled for 1 hour 15 minutes block time, but typically takes 1 hour 5 minutes in the air, that 10 minutes of padding absorbs minor delays at the gate, headwinds, or holding patterns.
If the delay exceeds the padding, you get a cascading utilization failure. The aircraft arrives late, the turn is compressed, the next departure is late, and by the end of the day you're violating curfew at the destination airport.
Which is the nightmare scenario for an operations control center. If a Ryanair 737 is scheduled to arrive at Stansted at 11:10 p.m., but a delay pushes it to 11:45, you're now in violation of the noise curfew. The aircraft may have to divert to an airport without a curfew, say Birmingham or Manchester, and then you've got 180 stranded passengers, a crew that's about to exceed duty limits, and an aircraft that's out of position for tomorrow's schedule.
That's a cascading utilization failure in real time, and it's why airlines invest so heavily in schedule optimization software. They're not just trying to maximize utilization, they're trying to maximize the probability of achieving the planned utilization.
This is where the second layer of optimization kicks in, not just scheduling the flights, but scheduling the maintenance. Airlines use what's called maintenance planning and control software, Boeing's Airplane Health Management, Airbus's Skywise, to predict component failures and schedule checks at the least disruptive time.
Predictive maintenance, not reactive.
And this is a fundamental misconception to bust. Airlines don't just fly planes until they break and then fix them. That would be catastrophically expensive and unsafe. Instead, maintenance is scheduled far in advance using predictive algorithms that analyze data from thousands of sensors on the aircraft. Rolls-Royce's Intelligent Engine program already predicts component failures more than 200 hours in advance.
You know a bearing is going to fail before it actually fails, and you can schedule the replacement during a planned A-check rather than grounding the aircraft for an unscheduled repair.
That's what the industry calls opportunity maintenance. You've got the aircraft in the hangar for a scheduled A-check anyway. While it's there, you replace a component that has 200 hours of life left, even though it hasn't failed yet. That avoids an unscheduled grounding 3 weeks from now that would disrupt the entire utilization plan.
The economics of this are brutal. An unscheduled grounding doesn't just cost the repair. It costs the lost revenue from every sector the aircraft doesn't fly, plus the cost of rebooking passengers, plus the cascading disruption to the rest of the network.
A single unscheduled grounding of a wide body can cost an airline over $1 million in direct and indirect costs. For a narrow body, it's in the hundreds of thousands. So the incentive to get predictive maintenance right is enormous.
Let's talk about the wide-body side of this. You mentioned Emirates targeting 15 to 16 block hours for their A380s. How does that work operationally?
Very differently from the Ryanair model. A Singapore Airlines, a 350 flying Singapore to London Heathrow. That's a 13-hour sector. It sits at Heathrow for about 2 hours for a transit check, cleaning, catering, and refueling, then flies back to Singapore. That's 28 block hours in roughly a 30-hour period. But then the aircraft is on the ground for 48 hours for a more thorough transit check before its next long-haul sector.
The utilization pattern is completely different. Long, intense bursts followed by extended ground time versus the short-haul model of constant cycling.
That creates a different maintenance challenge. The stress on an airframe isn't just about flight hours, it's about cycles. A cycle is one takeoff and one landing, and each cycle pressurizes and depressurizes the fuselage, which causes metal fatigue over time. A short-haul aircraft doing 8 cycles a day accumulates cycle fatigue much faster than a long-haul aircraft doing 2 cycles in the same period, even if the long-haul aircraft flies more block hours.
The maintenance program has to track both hours and cycles, and the limiting factor might be different for different aircraft in the same fleet.
And this is where Emirates' mixed-gauge strategy for the A380 gets clever. They fly the A380 on ultra-long-haul routes like Dubai to Los Angeles or Dubai to Auckland, where the aircraft is airborne for 16-plus hours per sector. But they also use it on shorter regional hops like Dubai to Jeddah or Dubai to Muscat to fill the schedule. This maximizes block hours but creates wildly different cycle counts between aircraft and the fleet, which complicates maintenance planning.
Because one A380 might be doing 2 cycles a day and accumulating cycles slowly, while another is doing 4 cycles a day and hitting its cycle-based maintenance thresholds much faster.
The maintenance planning software has to track all of this across the entire fleet, optimizing not just for each individual aircraft, but for the fleet as a whole. It's a system-level optimization problem that makes scheduling a chess tournament look simple.
There's another dimension to this. The entry into service effect. New aircraft types don't hit their target utilization immediately.
The Boeing 787 is the poster child for this. When it entered service in 2011, it had severe teething problems, battery fires, Rolls-Royce engine issues, software glitches. Utilization was forced below 10 block hours per day for the first 18 months. Airlines that had built their business plans around the 787's promised efficiency were hemorrhaging money because the aircraft simply wasn't flying enough hours.
Now, mature 787 fleets hit 14 to 15 block hours a day. That's a 50% improvement from the early days.
The learning curve is steep, but it's also expensive. When you buy a new aircraft type, you're essentially buying into a validation period where the manufacturer and the airline jointly discover what the real-world maintenance intervals need to be. The manufacturer's initial maintenance program is conservative. They schedule checks more frequently than may ultimately be necessary. And over the first few years, as data accumulates, the intervals are extended.
Utilization improves over time, not because the aircraft gets better, but because the maintenance program becomes more efficient.
Because the airline's maintenance organization learns the aircraft's quirks. They build up spare parts inventories, train technicians, develop institutional knowledge about which components fail early and which can be pushed. It's an organizational learning process as much as a technical one.
Let's talk about the dark side of utilization pressure. The 737 MAX grounding.
The MAX grounding in 2019 exposed something ugly about how the utilization imperative can distort decision-making. The MCAS system, the Maneuvering Characteristics Augmentation System, was designed specifically to make the MAX handle identically to the 737NG, so airlines could schedule it identically without additional pilot training. The entire business case for the MAX was that it would slot seamlessly into existing 737 operations with no utilization penalty.
The utilization target drove a design shortcut that created a safety risk.
That's the uncomfortable reality. The pressure to keep utilization numbers up didn't just affect how airlines operated the aircraft, it affected how Boeing designed it. When you're promising airlines that a new aircraft type will achieve the same block hours per day as the previous generation from day one, you're making an engineering promise that may not be achievable without cutting corners.
There was also the FII audit of United Airlines maintenance records in 2024, which found that pressure to keep planes flying led to deferred maintenance on 787s.
That audit was revealing. United had been deferring non-critical maintenance items to keep aircraft in service, which is technically allowed under FII regulations. There's a whole system called the minimum equipment list that specifies what can be deferred and for how long. But the audit found that United was pushing the boundaries of what constitutes acceptable deferral, essentially treating the MEL as a scheduling tool rather than a safety buffer.
The MEL is the list of equipment that can be inoperative and still allow the aircraft to fly legally. A coffee maker can be deferred for days, a hydraulic pump, not so much.
The temptation is to defer everything that can legally be deferred to keep the utilization numbers up. but defer too much, and you're flying an aircraft with a growing list of inoperative equipment, which increases the workload on the crew and incrementally erodes safety margins.
The utilization ratchet at work. Every extra block hour per day is revenue, and every deferral buys you another day of flying without taking the aircraft out of service.
Here's the counterintuitive part, beyond a certain point. Roughly 13 to 14 block hours per day for narrow bodies, utilization gains are offset by increased costs. Maintenance costs rise non-linearly as you push utilization higher, because components wear faster and unscheduled groundings become more frequent. Crew overtime costs kick in. Fuel burn increases because you're padding schedules more aggressively, which means flying faster to make up time, which burns more fuel.
There's an economic sweet spot. More utilization isn't always better.
The sweet spot varies by airline, by fleet type, by route network, by regulatory environment. Ryanair can profitably operate at 11.5 block hours because their cost structure is so lean. A legacy carrier with higher labor costs and a more complex fleet might find the sweet spot closer to 10 block hours. It's not a universal number.
What about the passenger experience side of this? When I'm boarding a plane for a 6 a.m. flight, what am I actually seeing in terms of the utilization machine?
When you board that 6 a.m. flight, you're seeing the result of a multi-year optimization of ground crew training, catering logistics, and fuel truck positioning. The aircraft itself is the least interesting part of the turnaround. The cleaning crew that went through the cabin at 5:30 a.m., their schedules were optimized months ago based on projected utilization patterns. The catering truck that's loading breakfast trays? The galley carts were pre-positioned at the gate the night before based on the catering forecast. The fuel truck that's topping off the tanks? The fuel load was calculated hours ago based on the flight plan, passenger count, and weather forecast.
If any one of those elements fails, the 25-minute turn becomes a 35-minute turn, and the whole day's utilization plan starts to unravel.
Which is why airlines that consistently achieve high on-time performance, ANA, Delta, Qatar, aren't just lucky. They've built in schedule padding and spare aircraft capacity that allow them to absorb delays without cascading failures. Delta, for example, maintains a spare ratio closer to 8%, which is higher than the industry average. That costs money in terms of aircraft sitting idle, but it pays off in operational reliability.
The spare aircraft is essentially an insurance policy against utilization disruption.
The premium on that insurance policy is the cost of capital for a $375 million aircraft sitting on the tarmac, not generating revenue. That's a hard trade-off for airline CFOs to swallow.
For investors looking at airline stocks, what's the metric that actually matters here?
The most important metric for airline profitability isn't load factor. That's what everyone talks about, how full the planes are. It's aircraft utilization. A 1% increase of block hours per day can add $50 to $100 million in annual revenue for a major carrier. But it also increases maintenance costs and crew fatigue risk, so it's not free money. The investors who really understand airlines look at utilization trends alongside maintenance costs per block hour and on-time performance. If utilization is rising, but maintenance costs are rising faster, that's a red flag.
Because it means the airline is flying the aircraft harder, but paying a disproportionate penalty in maintenance.
If on-time performance is declining while utilization is rising, that's another red flag. It means the schedule padding isn't adequate for the utilization level, and the operation is starting to fray at the edges.
The system works for now. But what happens when the next generation of aircraft enters service? Electric and hydrogen aircraft are going to break every assumption we just talked about.
This is where it gets really interesting. The Heart Aerospace ES-30, a 30-seat electric regional aircraft, will need 30 to 60 minutes of battery charging between flights. That fundamentally breaks the 25-minute turn model. You can't swap batteries in an electric aircraft the way you can refuel a jet, at least not with current technology. So the entire utilization equation changes.
The turn time becomes the charging time, and the charging time is dictated by battery chemistry, not ground crew efficiency.
Hydrogen aircraft like what ZeroAvia is developing have their own utilization challenges. Hydrogen refueling infrastructure doesn't exist at scale, and hydrogen has different handling requirements than Jet A. The turn time for a hydrogen aircraft might be longer than for a conventional jet, at least initially, which means fewer sectors per day and lower utilization.
Which means the business model has to compensate. Either the aircraft has to be cheaper to acquire, or the operating costs have to be dramatically lower, or the routes have to support higher yields.
That's the open question the industry is grappling with. If electric aircraft can only achieve 8 block hours per day instead of 11, but their energy costs are 80% lower, does the math still work? The answer probably depends on the route and the regulatory environment. Carbon taxes or emissions trading schemes could shift the balance significantly.
The other frontier is predictive maintenance using AI. We mentioned Rolls-Royce's intelligent engine, but this is going much further.
The next 5 years are going to transform maintenance scheduling. Instead of scheduling checks by calendar or flight hours, airlines will schedule them based on real-time component wear data streamed from the aircraft. Every engine, every hydraulic pump, every landing gear actuator will have a digital twin that predicts its remaining useful life with increasing accuracy. The aircraft will essentially tell the airline when it needs maintenance, rather than the airline guessing based on statistical averages.
Which means utilization could increase without compromising safety, because you're not doing maintenance on a schedule that's conservative to cover the worst case. You're doing maintenance exactly when it's needed.
That's the holy grail. If you can eliminate unnecessary maintenance while still catching every issue before it becomes a safety risk, you can push utilization higher without the disproportionate cost penalty we talked about earlier. The economic sweet spot shifts upward.
To circle back to the original question, is there an upper limit to how many flight movements a short-haul plane can do in a day? The answer is no. There's no regulatory cap. The limit comes from the maintenance program, the crew duty limits, the airport curfews, and the economic optimization that balances revenue against maintenance costs.
The mandatory resting period for the aircraft isn't a regulatory requirement. It's the overnight curfew window when demand is low and maintenance can be performed. The aircraft doesn't need rest. It needs maintenance, and the maintenance window is squeezed between the last arrival and the first departure.
The plane can fly back-to-back sectors indefinitely. The humans cannot.
Which is why the crew duty limits are the real hard constraint on daily utilization. The aircraft could physically fly more sectors than it does. The pilots can't legally fly them.
All of this optimization is invisible to passengers, but it shapes every aspect of your flying experience. When you see a plane at the gate with a 25-minute turn, you're watching the result of a multi-year optimization of ground crew training, catering logistics, and fuel truck positioning. The plane itself is the least interesting part of the turnaround.
When your flight departs on time at 6 a.m., it's because a maintenance team worked through the night. A scheduling algorithm predicted the right spare aircraft positioning 3 days ago, and the crew duty limits were calculated to the minute. The fact that this system works as reliably as it does, across tens of thousands of flights per day, is remarkable.
The system works, for now. But the next generation of aircraft is going to break every assumption we've just talked about. Electric charging times, hydrogen infrastructure, AI-driven predictive maintenance. The utilization equation is about to get rewritten.
That's going to be fascinating to watch. The airlines that figure out the new utilization sweet spot first will have an enormous competitive advantage. The ones that don't will be stuck with expensive assets that aren't flying enough hours to pay for themselves.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the 1920s, a researcher studying permafrost methane in the Namib Desert discovered the perfectly preserved carcass of a fennec fox that had been frozen in an ancient methane seep for an estimated 4,000 years. When thawed for examination, the fox's fur released a faint but distinct odor of natural gas, leading the research team to nickname it the world's oldest scented candle.
A lot to process. This has been my Weird Prompts, thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop. If you enjoyed this episode, leave us a review wherever you get your podcasts. It helps other people find the show. We'll be back next week.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, my weird prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep,
The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.